is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Today's show is brought to you by Paul's Automotive. Paul's Automotive is located at 634 Route 46 in Kenville, New Jersey. If you want a master mechanic who has over 38 years of experience with quality work, he's your guy to call. He strives to keep you in a safe and reliable vehicle, and his goal is to make your experience as pleasurable and convenient as possible. It's not like you're dropping your car off and you're getting somebody named Joe Blow who's working on your car. Paul's the guy that'll be working on your car, and he gives you a reasonable price. We're proud to say that he's helped Autism Radio many times to keep our vehicle safe and reliable on the road. So he's your guy to give a call today at 973-584-1035. Remember, he's always committed to quality, and he's pleasurable to work with, and he is very helpful. So give him a call today at 973-584-1035 today.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org. Home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at autismdonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad and author of The Spectrum Diet, Master Chef and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction. As always, it's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. I'd also like to welcome back to the program my co-host, Yelin Glukoff.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good, Lynn. It's great to have you back on this week. We have a great topic to talk about today. We put a social media question out about children, adults on the autism spectrum disorder that receive a dual diagnosis. Sometimes autism could be combined with a mental health disorder, which is actually very common. And also, how many of people out there received a dual diagnosis about either their child or even their own adult with autism? And also, many people with ASD also have epilepsy as well and other neurological disorders. And also, what kind of doctor do you see for treatment or possibly any medication, and also the most helpful resource? So this was like a lot of information in this question, and we did get some great answers that Lynn is going to be sharing with us.
Yeah, Paul, I also want to just ask how you're doing about, you know, with your surgery and your recovery. You sound a lot better.
We're getting there. I mean, I'm still not sleeping at night. I'm able to do the show because of my daughter, because she set this up for me, so I don't have to move too much because,
right,
you know, I still can't do anything with the left arm, so it does make it very difficult to do a lot of things. And biggest thing is really a lot of pain at night, and not being able to sleep is definitely a challenge. And I have some neck pain going on too, which I think is from the, unfortunately, from the, you know, sling that they put on. It goes around your neck, and, you know, when I'm sitting, I'll take it off, but at night I have to keep it on, and it definitely affects my neck, so I'm having some neck pain.
Okay.
But I don't want to depress everybody, but yeah, you know, it's a long recovery, and it is uncomfortable, but, you know, each day I figure is one day getting to the end, and every day I go through is closer to getting better, hopefully. So that's what I would like to tell everybody.
Everybody, we're all glad that you can do the show, because without you, there's no show.
Yeah, well, no, it's definitely, you know, if it wasn't for my daughter, like I said, she set everything up here right on the couch for me to make it possible, because I really can't even sit at a computer right now. So, you know, she basically put everything right here, and I just push a button and do this and do that. It makes it really easy for me. So
okay.
I got to thank my daughter, Emily.
The question, getting back to... the reason I think it came into me was I speak with a lot of people online. A lot of people online have kids with epilepsy. Seems to be, you know, very common, and they're dealing with more than one issue with their child with autism, and it seems to be very common that they do have more than one diagnosis. I'm going to go through quickly some of the answers. The first person had a son who's 30, older, has autism, Tourette's, and OCD. And he's also being screened for ADD, which we know is autism, what is it?
Attention deficit disorder. Yeah, right.
Right. Now, the next person said ADHD, which I believe is the same idea, but it's like hyper and general depression disorder and general anxiety disorder. And the reason why I think of this is because I think with my son, with Michael, I think a lot of it is anxiety. And I think you had mentioned, too, that Jonathan has some anxiety issues. I think our kids just having to deal with not being able to communicate properly, and it causes a lot of frustration, a lot of anxiety on their part. So, and the world to them is not something that they can navigate that easily. So a lot of these mental health issues come into play.
Yeah, you can, and I'm sure, Lynn, you agree, like you can almost see it coming when they have like a little bit of a mini meltdown. You know, they're trying to get something across to us, to tell us something, and all of a sudden you can see the upsetment. I know, well, at least speaking for my son, Jonathan, you know, he definitely, you can tell when it's happening because you'll see his facial expression start to change and you'll see more stimming with his hands. And and I know it's coming and I'm like, uh-oh, what's the matter, buddy? And I see him and I try to address the situation before he gets excited, but sometimes that doesn't matter. And, you know, obviously he wants something, you know, usually it's, he wants something and I think he just wants to be able to turn around and say, Dad, this is, can you do this for me? Can I get this, you know?
It's
sad, you know, and I've had
painful as a parent, definitely.
I think the worst thing, you know, I had recently the other night, he's sitting on the couch and we're watching the hockey game. And, you know, my daughter was at softball and it was him and I just sitting here. And he started to just bawl out and cry, you know, like,
aww.
And it was like, it was quiet. He wasn't making noise. It was just tears down his face, like rolling like crazy. And he's wiping his eyes and he's sniffling. And then he started to make some crying noises and he just started bawling and it was horrible. And I'm like, buddy, what's the matter? You know, like,
aww.
It just broke my heart, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of parents that have had that moment and it just, you just really want to be able to reach in and help your child at the moment. And you know, you never want to see your kid hurt, sad, or, you know, no matter who they are, you know.
Right.
You know, even parents that have kids that are troubled, you know, sometimes, you know, you hear moms, oh, I can't stand my son. But, you know, once they see something happen to their son, they go, oh, you okay, you know, right away, you know.
Right.
So it's just
did you
of
find
being
out
a parent.
What it was, or?
No, he just, you know, that's the thing. And I think at that moment I said, man, I just wish I could get inside your head and really see what you feel. And I think, you know, it goes back to when I wrote Hope Saves the Day, the song, you know, it's the same thing. It definitely, it's that connection, wanting to know what you're feeling, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a really
also, I don't know,
thing.
You know, I noticed this later on with Michael after I had my daughter, who was typical, that I don't know if it's the same as this case with Jonathan, but Michael, and I don't know if it's with all kids on the spectrum, so I really don't know, but I know with Michael, he doesn't really like to be comforted when he's upset.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan's the same way.
Because
he pushed me away.
Yeah, he pushes me away. So I always found that to be so upsetting as a mom, and, you know, like you want to cuddle your kid or calm them or whatever.
Yeah, you want to give him nurturing, you know.
Weird thing is with Michael, it's like when he's happy, he wants the cuddling and all that stuff. But when he's unhappy, he pushes me away, and I know something's bothering him.
Well, yeah, and that breaks your heart. You know, that just
heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
You know, and then it wasn't until I had my daughter, and she started crying, and I automatically assumed she was either hungry or had to go to the bathroom because Michael never wanted to be comforted.
Right.
So as a baby, you know, you comfort the baby. And, you know, Michael never wanted that, but Amanda, as soon as I lifted her up, she would be quiet. She just wanted
to be
attention, and she just wanted to be calmed, you know. So it was just a whole different, you know, dynamic.
You know, it's interesting because, I think about your situation. Like, you flip-flop versus me. Like, I had a daughter first.
Right.
You know, I mean, other than her hearing challenge, you know, she was neurotypical on the scale. But, you know, she'd obviously, same thing. She'd cry, you pick her up, she'd stop. Where, you know, my son would fall and hit his knee or something, and he wouldn't cry.
They don't cry.
And he wouldn't cry. And I'm like, is he okay? Like, that was weird, you know?
Yeah.
And then sometimes I would find it was almost like a delayed reaction. He'd cry later, and it was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure.
It's very upsetting.
But we want to hear from some of these parents before we get to off the topic.
My son has autism, severe learning disabilities, dyspraxia. She said she thinks you call it DCD. I haven't heard. I know that when Michael was diagnosed, they had said apraxia. I'm not sure what dyspraxia is. I think it's similar, maybe something with the speech. I'm not sure. Okay. The next person, my son was diagnosed with ASD, ADHD, intellectually challenged, and recently with a seizure, just disorder. She said she takes him to Yale, and the doctors are really supportive there, and their work is amazing. And that was really this other, and then we were one last person who said, my son has autism, unilateral microphthalmia, so an eye birth defect. This is really sad. Visually and hearing impaired, sensory processing disorder, ataxia, aphasia, and epilepsy from the brain tumor. That's really sad.
Wow.
These people are just so sad. I remember my husband once met someone who was had autism and was blind. And,
oh, wow.
And he's like, imagine having autism and being blind, because
yeah.
that's one of the things that they rely on is their sight. And, like, imagine having a child who can't, you know.
Well, it's so weird because you say that. You know, I always worry about my son's eye because he always had this red eye. And I'm, like, worried about, you know, his eye. If, you know, something's wrong with his eye, does he have an infection? You know, could he lose his sight, you know?
Mm.
And I finally found an eye doctor. I mean, it was just allergies at the time, thank God.
Oh,
but,
really?
Okay. But, he had this chronic redness in his eyes. Like, his eyes were, like, bloodshot all the time. And I was really worried about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with our good friend of the show who does a lot of great work behind the scenes. His son, you know, had glaucoma as a baby and, you know, it was very scary, you know, something like that. Anything with eyes. I mean, my father has made us paranoid with anything with eyes. So,
So
definitely... makes me a little nervous when it comes to eyes with pencils and sharp objects and just everything, because, you know, you lose your sight, that's it. You know, you only have one set of eyes, as my dad always used to say. So, which is...
Well, I know with Michael, we had wanted a few times they thought there was something wrong with his eyes, and I had taken him to an eye doctor because he has a problem scanning. And, you know, this is why we couldn't really do the iPad and everything. He's always, and even now, he still has issues with scanning, and we finally found a therapist who realized that he can only scan on one side. For some reason, he leans towards one side. Now, I don't know if that's the way his brain picks up signals from that side stronger for some reason, but she was amazing, because out of all these years, this was just like 2 years ago, maybe this new therapist realized that he favors one side. So we did, but when he was younger, they also noticed the same thing, that the scanning was always bad, you know, compared to other kids. So I tried to take him to an eye doctor. Now, try to take it to an autistic kid to an eye doctor. They don't sit still.
No, that's our biggest problem, is finding an eye doctor that'll take my son that actually can get a read on his eyes. We haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, and then, you know, they could, so the guy was pretty good, but at that time, Michael couldn't, and I don't think even now, he can't say the alphabet, so how's he going to be able to read the things off the, you know, he doesn't
off
the letters,
eye chart,
you know?
Right.
So we've never bothered, but I always wondered, you know, does he have, I mean, there's no, and then, you know, my husband and I were saying, even if he did need glasses, you know, would he keep them on his face?
Right. Well, that's the big question. It's true. I mean, I think my son would probably be throwing them on the floor.
Yeah,
you take him off and flip him off his face, and, you know, because,
yeah.
I mean, it's funny. He, in the summer, we give him sunglasses. You know, we have UVB and UV-protected sunglasses. And he'll put them on, and he'll leave them on for a little while, and then all of a sudden we're walking. He's got no sunglasses on. Where the hell did they go? He threw them on the ground somewhere.
Yeah.
And we lose them. I mean, we must have lost. I mean, thank God they're cheap, but we probably lost, you know, a dozen pairs of sunglasses over a summer.
Oh, yeah, no, we don't even bother with that. With Michael. Even the hat lately, he doesn't even like the hat. So much, you know, to we try to put a hat on him at least, you know, but
right.
He'll tolerate that. I just wanted to point out, after I finished doing this research, I found something online saying that autism and epilepsy in both children and adults on the autism spectrum independently, autism and epilepsy, seizures of unknown cause, each occur in around 1% of the general population, but epilepsy rates among those with autism spectrum disorder range from 20 to 40%. With the highest rates among those among the severely impaired by autism. Conversely, about 5% of children who develop epilepsy in childhood go on to develop autism. So there's a pretty interesting connection there with epilepsy and autism. We've
yeah.
been at that since Michael's young, so just wanted our audience to be aware of that.
Yeah, and some other things, Lynn, you know, maybe they're not aware of, like dual diagnosis, like mm-hmm. which means like co-occurring or coexisting. Obviously, it means one disability at the same time having more than one disability, and some of the ones, like you were saying, you know, it could be low IQ, seizures, even chronic constipation is categorized, diarrhea, sleep problems is actually put into this, pica, low muscle tone, sensory integration disorder, even allergies, immune system problems, high or low pain thresholds, hearing, visual impairments, And even other co-occurring diagnoses include attention deficit disorder, which you mentioned before,
yes.
Down syndrome, Fragile X syndrome, depression, and anxiety are all included in dual diagnosis.
Yeah,
and that's from the Autism Society of America, actually.
Yeah, it's so interesting how, you know, you definitely see a lot of the hyperactivity with our kids, too, with sleep issues we talked about once. And it's so interesting how a lot of the mental health, like I said, that seems to be a common thread. And when Mike was very young, actually one of the first doctors who he didn't diagnose him, but it was really early on. And he said to me, is there any history of mental health issues in your family? Which, like, we were like, well, what does that have to do with autism? But actually, he said he was doing research at the time to see, he said he found a very strong connection between mental health issues being in the family, in the, you know, immediate family, I guess, to the child having autism. And he was working on that research. I don't know whatever happened to that piece of research, but I that always kind of sticks in the back of my mind. I mean, but then again, you know, what family doesn't have mental health issues? I don't know of that many people that don't have any mental health issues in the family, but I guess he meant maybe he meant in the immediate family or in the, you know, close-knit family. I found that really interesting, you know, that there's some kind of connection there.
Well, you know, there was a study that was done about people that are in math and science backgrounds usually have some sort of a disability. And even fall on the spectrum, they say a high percentage.
Right.
I remember,
right.
I don't remember what the percentage was, but they were saying a high percentage of that.
Right, they have like the Asperger's.
You know, it's like, you know, when you talk about, we were talking about the, you know, co-diagnosis, you know, like for instance, like intellectual disability, like how can you do a verbal IQ test? You know, how could it be measured accurately if your child, you know, is nonverbal? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's,
right.
It, you know, there is a test actually out there, and parents should be aware of this because, you know, it's very important, and we always like to emphasize this, Lynn, is that, you know, children should always get diagnosed as early, no matter what. If you have any suspicion whatsoever, do yourself a favor for the child, and it's not about you because, you know, a lot of parents are very proud, and they say, oh, there's nothing wrong with my son, and they're in denial. You know, you got to get over that. And I tell them all the time, Lynn, I've been this 100 times with families that are in denial because the only benefit, the earlier you can identify and the earlier you can get the child into intervention, especially in appropriate educational and, you know, social and therapeutic intervention is so important, you know, for them. And a lot of the outcomes are very positive, you know, once they get their kids in early. And, you know, they start to realize that, you know, I know one family in particular, they started kind of late, but now they're seeing some progress and they're like, Paul, if it wasn't for you to tell us this, my child would not be where he is today.
Wow.
You know?
So,
I mean, you know, it's important to emphasize that, I think, sometimes. And that's just it sounds simple and basic, but do you know how many families have kids and they say, well, yeah, my son seems off, but, you know, he's a boy. You know, or, you know, oh, my daughter, you know, maybe she's just a little delayed. But you know what? You can't do that nowadays.
No.
Because we have so much better services and better diagnosis than we had years ago. And they're proving that the sooner you get into child into therapy, you know, and you know, interventions, it helps them so much. And the outcomes are way better. You know.
Yeah, and I used to speak, and I've been speaking at some preschools, and I've heard from the educators that a lot of the parents, believe it or not, they don't want to hear it. Like, even if the instructor or teacher tries to point it out or see certain signs, they'll try to talk to the parents and say, you know, maybe you should call it early intervention, call the state, and the parent just doesn't want to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the easy way out.
It is,
oh,
you know.
Along with my kid, you know, but... You know, you're hurting your, like, it's more self. It's just selfish to do that. You're not helping anyone. You're in denial, and denial's the easy way out. It's harder to face things. You know,
no, it's true.
The stronger person is the one who faces the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's true, but I think also sometimes, you know, it also could be a parent saying, you know, if someone else, let's put it this way, okay, in a different way. If you say to a parent, oh, I think your child, you know, has some struggles, you might get defensive, right? Because let's face it, you're protecting your child. That's that
right.
natural instinct.
Right.
So that happens
That's
too.
True. That's true.
And I'll give you an example. My aunt, and this is actually talking about myself for everybody out there. My aunt was a special needs teacher. She was a school teacher.
Right.
And she kept saying, you know, I needed some help. I had, you know, some challenges. I had, ADD. She definitely, from all her kids she ever worked with, now granted this is very early 1970s,
right?
So it was definitely not as much out there as there is today, for sure. But you know, I had definitely, she said I had ADD. Okay, but meanwhile, my father didn't want to hear it. Number one, it's his sister, right? Let's face it. You don't want to hear from your siblings usually, because, you know, especially if you've, you know, competitive, you know. So you don't want to think your sibling is correct. That's a normal thing. I mean, I think it works with most families for sure. In some way, in some shape or form, there's always something. So he didn't want to listen to her. So basically, what happened to me, I went through school struggling, until my teacher in fifth grade, you know, finally pulled my parents in and realized that, you know, I was testing way below a fifth grade level, and I was kind of getting through the system. I scraped by. And it had nothing to do with intelligence, because she said, you know, your son is extremely smart.
Right.
And that's why he was actually able to overcome his disability.
Right.
So, you know, it just, and it was really my dad. I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, my dad's the best. I mean, but he definitely did not want to listen. And that was also the mentality back then, too. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Times have changed now, too. But still, we're still finding a lot of even certain ethnic groups are very proud of their children. And they see there's nothing wrong. I went to Passaic a couple years ago and spoke at a church and met a couple Latino families. And the women came to me and said, yes, my husband, you know, denies, you know, and he says, there's nothing wrong with my son. And she goes, I'm the mother. I know there's something wrong. And he would not sign the paperwork to get the proper help. So, because it takes two parents, remember, you can't just have one parent sign you up. You need both parents to be on board with this. So he said no. And she, you know, would not listen to him. And when he was there, he happened to be there. It opened his eyes, and, you know, she called me, I'll never forget it, and she says, you know, he signed the paperwork, and we finally got our son into early intervention today. You know, and he was almost too old, because three, they cut you off in New Jersey. So he was literally like 4 months shy of his third birthday, and so at least he got started, and he got in the system now, so he was able to continue when he went to, you know, school, and he was able to get still services after that. So that was, and, you know, it's just a simple thing like that. Someone hearing your story and realizing that you have nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that has to do a lot.
It's the way someone words it to a parent.
Well, yeah. And it, you know, it's you know, especially I think a father about their son. Oh, that's my boy. He's going to play soccer. He's going to be a champion. And they have all, you know, dads build their kids up in their minds what they're going to be. And it doesn't always turn out that way. I know a good friend of mine who wanted his son to play sports, and he really was never into sports, and he took a liking to music. And finally, he realized one day that he had to support his son in music, but it took quite a few years of struggling and fighting with his child that, you know, oh, well, you're going to go out for basketball, you're going to go out for baseball, and he didn't really have any interest. He was just doing it and going through the motions. So I think as a parent, you know, you need to realize it's not about you. It's about your child, and it's about the success of your child. And I think that's you have to put first is, you know, get over yourself. I mean, I hate to be a little harsh, but
exactly.
You kind of got to get over yourself, and you have to realize, okay, it's not about you. Your child needs this help.
Right.
You're hurting your child by holding them back of getting him the diagnosis.
Yeah, and you need that diagnosis to get those services.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing.
You will not get anything without a diagnosis. And the earlier you get, and the more hours you get, one of my doctors saved my life by saying, get as many hours for him as you can now so that you can get a lot of hours later. And, oh, my God, I mean, we would never have the services we have now if I didn't listen to this doctor, because I really pushed for more hours for early intervention for Michael because of his severity. And, you know, now the district has to, you know, I said, how could you cut us? He had 40 hours of early intervention. I can't go from 40 to 20, you know. So we were able to get, you know, after-school care and all that for him. So, and he needs it. I mean, it's not like, you know, he doesn't need it. But if I didn't have those hours going in there, you know, I wouldn't have gotten the services that I'm getting now.
Right. You have to fight. You have to fight for everything, that's for sure. But
that's another whole story.
But we got to thank everybody, Lynn, you know, for supporting. The question of the week, it's been great. I know Lynn's been enjoying interacting with our fans out there and our listeners. every week, and you know, we're getting a lot of responses from this stuff, and these are things that, you know, are important topics to talk about sometimes, because, you know, I've had a lot of parents that just got a recent diagnosis that stumbled across our program and website, or I had a family who might have stumbled across it that suspected that maybe the child had autism, and then they hear our broadcast and they really, it put them over that hump to get the diagnosis. So if we do that for one person, Lynn, we did our job. That's the way I look at it. So
that's how I look at it.
We just want to thank everybody, you know, for the continued support, you know, again, and also want to remind everybody to save the date. Friday, this September the 18th, our casino night at the Bethwood in Toto, New Jersey. Tickets are $95, and on autismradio.org today, you can purchase your tickets. And also, if you want to be a sponsor, we still have plenty of sponsorship opportunities available to you, which can definitely showcase your business at this great event and give you some great exposure, both on radio, our website, as well as at the event itself. And also, you get some tickets with that sponsorship for your employees and also for yourself. And it's going to be a great night out. So we're expecting everybody to have a good time. And we hope we see everybody there.
Uh-huh.
And we thank everybody again for continued support here on the program. We wish everybody a great week, everyone, as this weather's getting warmer. Make sure you get outside today and play outdoors and put the iPads away and the videos away for a little bit and get outside. Because the weather's nice out there now. So we want to wish everybody a great week. And remember, until next time, everybody, hope saves the day.
Every time I see your smile, I wonder what you feel. Every time you laugh or cry, I wonder if it's real. You seem trapped inside. Please help me understand, what is your world like? I want to feel your love. I want to know what it's like to laugh and play. Imagine a thought that you cannot feel, a tear trapped inside. Imagine a sound that you cannot make, no matter how hard you try. I want you to know how I'm feeling. I want you to know how it feels to be me. I wish you could look into my world and see how I see. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope each day. Let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day. Show you what I see. What kind of life will I have? What's in store for me? Don't be afraid, just love and hold me. I can be all that I can be. With your love I can do anything. With your love I can see the world like rays of light shine upon me, inside of me. Then you are right by my side. I will love you till the end of time. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope. Let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day.